Welcome in. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jeff Parles. Matt Holt, usually here on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
To my left. The show is not Market Watch, thankfully. It is the Nightcap. I'll be in for Tim the next three nights. Tim, a well-earned break.
Headed up to a lovely 48-degree Connecticut.
Well, that's, I don't know what 48 degrees is right now, man.
No.
I don't know what that is anymore. I shouldn't make fun. My whole family's up in that direction. Anyway, lovely 48 degrees in Connecticut, as Matt said. A great show, as always, lined up for you. Later this hour, 7:45 Pacific, 10:45 Eastern, Ben Standig of The Athletic will be with us to break down the NFL draft. Kurt Hillen of NBC Sports at the top of the next hour. And then our friend Johnny Avello from DraftKings will be with us at midnight Eastern. Don't worry, Johnny's on the West Coast. He'll be awake still at 9:05 local time here in Vegas. Of course, we're broadcasting from Circa, as we always do. And Matt, there is a lot going on right now. Before we get to the two NBA games that are about to tip, I just want to make sure here, because when Tim and I were on Friday, so the last time I was on this show, Joe Musgrove threw the first no-hitter in San Diego Padres history. Now, a franchise that has plenty of no-hitters, especially from left-handed pitchers. Hello, Mark Burley.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon, who has had a wayward career so far. A lot of good, a lot of bad for Rodon against a Cleveland team that does not hit very well, has six perfect innings under his belt in an 8-0 White Sox lead.
And boy, did he just snap off a curveball there to end the sixth.
Rodon, again, and he's doing it in very surprising fashion. That was just his third strikeout of the night.
Wow.
So Rodon, usually a big strikeout, a big walk guy.
Yep.
Doing it with Cleveland making contact. 75 pitches through six. So
which hasn't been great for Rodon throughout his career are making contact.
Right. And Matt, so far, we have a shot here. We have a shot here with a Cleveland team that, let's just face it, other than Jose Ramirez, just doesn't have a lot in that lineup.
No, they don't. No. Their bats haven't come to life. Even though they got the win and covered the run line yesterday, they scored zero runs through the first nine innings.
That was a lovely winner for me.
Terrible loser for me on Chicago plus 1.5.
Oh, well, that's just not
I
nice.
I did a little on-air venting, which I rarely do.
That's a brutal one there for
our
friend Matt Holt.
That was a stink bomb.
That's horrendous for sure. Let's two NBA games about to get going. Let's just go there real quick, Matt. We'll start in the capital of California, Sacramento. Hosting the Wizards, yes, I know what a high octane matchup this is, but it is the highest total by far on the board today at 242.5 right now. As this one's about to close, Wizards road favorites laying two. The props on your screen via DraftKings, as always, the Russell Westbrook props bonanza, 23.5 on points and 12.5 Matt on boards and assists apiece.
And there was going to be some question marks on the availability of Buddy Hield tonight, but he will be in for the Sacramento Kings. So pretty much a full roster for both teams here, and almost a pick 'em game. The Wizards are 2-point favorite. almost across the board here. So this is a good one. Look, the Wizards getting a little love after they whipped the Utah Jazz on the road here this week. This one will be interesting to see how it goes. I usually like playing against teams after they're coming off a monster win like that.
That was a totally bizarre win the other night, too,
yes.
Where Utah, there was the first home loss in 22 games as well for the Jazz.
And, yep.
Unsurprisingly, Russell Westbrook had a huge game in that one. Again, we know Russell's thoughts about Salt Lake City, so not surprising at a huge one.
They were up 109-90 at one point in the fourth. I mean, the Wizards didn't just beat them. They beat them down.
Well, the Wizards, that road trip has had some weird results. That Warriors game that Tim and I were on the air for last week, where Bradley Beal off the scramble gets fouled shooting a three-pointer. Great play by Wiggins, by the way, in that one. But again, the Wizards still technically in the race for the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, just because the East right now is at the bottom.
A special place.
A very special place, yes. That's a good way to put that there, Matt. As we'll continue on, another big NBA game to go with next. Mm-hmm. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. Matt Holt alongside. It's been about, I don't know, about 14 and a half months since you and I did our last show together.
Well, last show like this, I mean, we did plenty of XFL football a year ago.
Yes, of course, of course. Can't forget Bedcast. That. The Bedcast. I miss the XFL. I miss the St. Louis Battle.
I started to come around on it. Boy, it was some ugly football early, at first. Yeah.
But it was fun by the end. And then, of course,
Pulled the plug.
Along with everything, the world stopped, of course, because of the virus. But
XFL, one of the few leagues that actually ended up pulling the plug, though.
Yes. Even though them and the Canadian Football League trying.
I heard.
They're trying, Matt.
Yeah, The Rock trying to get it going.
We'll see what happens. But we're happy to be with you. I'm in for Tim the next few nights. A well-earned vacation to a balmy Connecticut for Tim Murray. Matt, let's just dive in. Another NBA game that's not quite underway. That's a really good one. The first game without Jamal Murray for the Denver Nuggets, taking on the Miami Heat on the second of a back-to-back. Denver open 2.5, now up to 5, as this one is moments away from tip-off in the Mile High City with a total of 209. Props on the board. If you're watching us at vsin.com, Jokic, if you want to go over on all of his props, 24.5 on points, 10.5 on boards, 9.5 on assists, you're asking Jokic to get a triple-double.
And this one got as high as 6.5, as it looked like Jimmy Butler was also going to be out. No Goran Dragic tonight on the back-to-back for Miami. Obviously, still no Victor Oladipo as he's dealing with injuries. And it looked like they were going to be without Jimmy Butler as well. Butler is going to play now tonight. But at one point, this thing all the way up to 6.5, back down to Denver -5.
Yeah, no, not much of
first game without Jamal Murray too for the Nuggets.
Yeah, this feels like one of those the fallen star properties, at least for this first game.
First game.
I would only lay.
They're betting it like that.
Yeah, I would only bet Denver, even at this bloated number from what it was when it opened at 2.5. But Matt, obviously, the Jamal Murray torn ACL, that completely changes the whole complex of how I look at the Western Conference, because before the injury, the Lakers obviously getting healthy as it goes along. LeBron and AD should be back in the next few weeks. But they were looking at a 4-5 matchup against a really salty Denver team that played.
Well, it would have been three tough matchups in a row, and now it's two.
Right. Now, exactly. That's the biggest thing, where the Lakers would have been favored as the 5 seed against the Nuggets, but they wouldn't have been a considerable favorite.
Probably like 180.
Yeah, I would have guessed about 180 minus 165, 170, somewhere in that pocket on the Lakers. But the big point, as you said, you take away Murray with that torn ACL, that series becomes considered.
Now they're -600.
Think they're still that? Yeah, I guess
it'll
they are.
Be
that
the, it'll
I,
be.
I yeah. guess so. What were they last year in the Western Conference Finals, even with Murray?
It was like 450.
They were still $455. Yeah. So, yeah, you're probably right, about $6 on the Lakers. And then you draw Utah, where the Lakers, I would still. Look, I know Utah would have home court. I'd still make the Lakers a $2 favorite in that
series. I think they're close to that, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Western Conference Finals, if it's Phoenix, they're probably 250, I would guess.
At least.
And then the Clippers, probably about -150, even though I think they'd be a little bit more. But that's the whole deal in the Western Conference and looking at the futures board, Matt, where I much rather would have a bet on the Lakers today than I would have 5 days ago.
Absolutely.
Because that route to get to the finals just got considerably more easy with the injury to Jamal Murray.
Absolutely, yeah. It completely changed the landscape, because even if LeBron and AD were completely healthy, you're like, boy, they're gonna have to exert themselves to beat Denver and then exert themselves to beat. I mean, this is going to be a tough road for the Lakers, and will they be exhausted by the time they get to the finals against a Brooklyn or a Philly? But now it looks like life just got a whole lot easier for the Lakers. And it's actually almost advantageous for them now to be in that 4 seed and face the 5 seed if Denver can hold on and be the 5. You know, Portland had a chance to really make that interesting. Of course, they lost last night to the Celtics.
You know, if I were the Lakers, I think I'd rather see Portland anyway.
Maybe.
I think I would.
No D, Portland.
No disrespect to Dame and company, but that's just the best, as we saw last year in the playoffs. That's just a horrible matchup.
And they don't play any defense.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Western Conference odds at DraftKings, and this is, again, just the impact of Jamal Murray, Denver, who was In the pocket of plus 750, plus 650 at some spots. Now back to 20-1. They're even behind Dallas right now.
And I've seen higher. I've seen 30-1s out there.
Yeah, and the Lakers.
Well, you have to remember what he did last year in the playoffs.
That was spectacular.
40, 50, 42 or something. Just insane in those three games.
Well, I mean, he and Donovan Mitchell went mano a mano in that first series against Utah versus Denver, where the slight pause in the middle of that series really kind of flipped that series on its head. It was heading towards Utah probably winning in five if there wasn't the pause in the middle of that series. Then Denver, of course, does that. And then, like you're saying,
then they come back from 3-1.
3-1 down against the Clippers, where the Clippers passed. They couldn't outrun it in that series against Denver. But look, it just, again, and there was a big article on ESPN today about just the truncated schedule and all the injuries that we're seeing. And the Jamal Murray one is the one that has really made the biggest difference in the betting markets this year, Matt. Even more so than anything that we have seen. At least, again, Klay Thompson's was a preseason injury. For an in-season injury, the Murray one, the biggest by far.
By far, yes. For a season ending. I mean, we've seen LeBron go down, AD go down, you know, KD be out for a while. But now they're all coming back. There will be no Jamal Murray the rest of the season.
Right, and those injuries, they moved the markets, but... Yeah. The Lakers have never really gotten above plus 250 to win the Western Conference.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I mean, they're still around $2 most of the entire way to win the Western Conference. Again, the Clippers just feel like they're lurking, Matt. They just feel like they're lurking, and it's just a matter of, again, can the Clippers outrun their own past?
Yeah.
And I know that's not, I know it's a year-to-year thing, but it showed up last year in the playoffs. There's no excuse for that collapse.
No, absolutely not.
None at all. By the way, Matt, both of those games we were just talking about underway, Denver quickly out 5-2, and they've gone a minute without scoring in Sacramento and Washington, which might be the only minute they go without scoring the whole game.
Yeah, it's 2-0 now.
Oh, okay.
Wizards on the board.
There we go.
Yep.
Quick halftimes in the NBA. There are two just bludgeonings going on with two bad teams against teams that are fighting for playoff spots and playoff position. The Indiana Pacers in Houston, I didn't understand why Houston got the betting attention in this game.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It would close 3.5, as low as that. Indiana on the road against the Rockets, who legitimately aren't trying, and not like the Pacers didn't have their guys tonight. Sabonis, Brogdon, and LeVert all playing regular minutes. And it's Indiana by 20 at the break at 75-55.
Yeah, absolutely. Houston's so bad. This line was strange. It was strange to see the money come in on Houston and Indiana, absolutely, just to your point, drubbing them at half.
Yeah, Indiana shooting 57% from the field. Jeremy Lamb actually leading the way off the bench. A nice 6-for-6 and 3-for-3 from three for
there
Jeremy
we go.
Lamb. So yeah. the former Connecticut product having a big day for Houston. Good day to have Christian Wood props. He already has 19 points.
He's been unbelievable. I mean, they've been terrible, but he's been really good since he came back from injury.
The other game still going at the half. Again, Oklahoma City still needs three wins to get over their preseason win total, Matt.
Doesn't look good tonight.
It does not look good. Well, it hasn't looked good for a while now, and I don't think it's getting any better.
They covered against Utah yesterday.
Yes, they did. Oh, well, that was Lou Dort had 42, which is one of the odder stat lines you're ever going to see. Not good against Golden State tonight. 75-54 Warriors all over OKC. Golden State closed. This is just a testament to what Oklahoma City is at this point. Golden State closed a 12-point road favorite tonight.
And missing guys still.
Missing guys and well on their way to covering. Steph Curry is playing, though. He has 17 for Golden State. The only other guy in double figures is Jordan Poole with 14, Matt.
This team's really, I think they would have been interesting, Golden State, if not for all the injuries lately. Wiseman was finally starting to come around. Kelly Oubre, who's, I think, out again tonight, who will be back, was starting to play some great ball. You know, it's just too bad, really. I mean, Eric Pascal was playing great, and so I don't think they have any real chance at causing any noise in the playoffs, this Golden State team. But, of course, on a night-to-night basis, Steph can still get it done, as we saw with 53 Monday night.
Maybe win a play-in game.
Maybe.
Maybe get in. Yeah, and then, look, if they get the 7 somehow and draw Phoenix, it's, again, I know.
I don't think they have enough. With no Wiseman, I don't think
they have enough. I don't think they have enough either, but you are talking about a team with limited playoff experience as a group against, again, it's a totally different looking Warriors team, obviously, but it's still Steph Curry.
Steph would have to go crazy.
I would still expect Phoenix in six. That would still be my expectation there. On the Matt Holt bet of the night so far, 27 seconds to go in Chicago, and talk about teams that are fighting to get into that play-in position, and the Bulls doing exactly what you cannot do in this spot. As a 9.5-point closing favorite here at Circa, losing to the lowly Magic with 27 seconds to go, 112-104, Orlando.
And that's not really indicative. They were down 21 at the end of the third.
Orlando 39-19 in the third quarter, which just cannot happen if you're Chicago. 22 for James Ennis to lead the way for Orlando. And this is happening to the Bulls with Vucevic and LaVine combining for 57. This is a loss you cannot take if you're Chicago, and they're about to take it.
Yeah, this is a bad one for sure. This is going to make them 22-32.
Right?
This is the one part about the play-in that I don't love is you have a team 10 games under 500, and we were talking about them potentially playing a playoff game.
Bulls right now sitting in 10th, a game and a half clear of Toronto, who has already won tonight against San Antonio, 117-112. So, hey, look, if you're Chicago, again, all you have to do is get yourself in a playoff and the play-in, and anything can happen. But you can't take a loss to a team who's legitimately not trying.
He was legitimately tanking, yes.
Yeah. The other bad team in the Eastern Conference, the other really bad team, I should say, the Pistons, closed 2.5 for 3-point dogs against the Clippers, who... This was the Clippers' starting lineup tonight, Matt. Patrick Patterson, Zubac, Reggie Jackson, Terrence Mann, Luke Kennard.
That's not good?
That's not good. Not good. None surprisingly, the Pistons in the lead with 2 minutes to go, 96-89. But they
still closed a favorite in this game with that lineup.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with them closing as a favorite because we are talking about the Pistons. Yeah. But Detroit up 7 with 1:56 to go. Jeremy Grant finding his early season form with 28 tonight, Matt.
Yeah, returning from an injury, Grant. There were question marks whether he'd play tonight, and boy, not only is he playing, but to your point, he's having a great game.
Absolutely. By the way, quick update on the south side of Chicago. Two down in the top of the seventh for Carlos Rodon, but it is now, right at him. There you go.
Yep.
21 up, 21 down
for Carlos Rodon. I thought Jose Ramirez right there.
I thought that was a hit.
Yeah.
And also only 85 pitches for Rodon. So, Matt, we are now on not only no hit watch, we are on perfecto watch for Carlos Rodon.
Six outs away.
Yes, and again, we're talking about against one of the worst offensive teams in baseball.
Yeah.
And the biggest roadblock has just been retired in Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, that's right.
So the Cleveland Indians will have Franmil Reyes, Eddie Rosario, Ahmed Rosario due up in the top of the eighth. Carlos Rodon trying just 5 days after Joe Musgrove had the first no-hitter of this season, trying to actually outdo Musgrove with a perfecto. And again, very unlike Rodon tonight, where he is a big strikeout guy, but he's usually also a big walk guy. Obviously no walks, no hit batsman so far. And only 4 strikeouts. It's a very uncharacteristic
Rodon
performance.
And a few balls like that. Just hit hard, but right at guys.
Well, you need luck when you throw one of these, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Again, the arguably the greatest defensive play in a perfect game no-hitter scenario came in this ballpark. In the Mark Burley.
Oh, the Burley
one. The Burley game against the Rays where Dwayne Wise made one of the most tremendous catches you're ever going to see.
Dwayne Wise.
Yes. Hey, he'll forever be in baseball lore because of that.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest baseball note by far tonight. 8-0 Chicago White Sox, but the score that's
irrelevant.
That's irrelevant here. The White Sox are more than likely going to win this game, barring something ridiculous. The total for this one, I believe, has already gone over as well. Yes, it was a 7.5. So that total has already gone over. It's all eyes on Carlos Rodon, who is 21 up, 21 down through 7 innings.
And I can't remember. When's the last perfect game we got? Who was the last one?
That is a good question.
I don't even remember.
Let's get on to the old internet. 23 in the history of baseball. The last perfect game looks like it was King Felix in 2012.
Wow.
Against the Tampa Bay Rays.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, it's 9 years. 9 years. Yes, that is the last perfect game. That was King Felix had to be perfect that day. That was a 1-0 final at Safeco.
This is great. I mean, I love rooting for something that, you know, hasn't happened in a decade. And then, you know, let's go Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if Rodon can complete it again. We've already had one no-hitter this year. It came on Friday. The San Diego kid.
Yeah.
Joe Musgrove did it for his hometown Padres against the Texas Rangers. By the way, did not go well for Musgrove tonight.
No.
His Padres lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That's three in a row.
Break up the Pirates, by the way, who, if my math is correct, Matt, are already 1/12 of the way to their win total with 5 wins this season.
Three of those over the San Diego Padres. Yeah,
incredible. When we get back, Matt, we're going to keep you updated on everything that's going on. We'll also tell you what else has happened in the NBA and Major League Baseball tonight. That's next. You're on the Nightcap on VSiN. Welcome back. It is the Indeed.com studio. Hiring, start finding the right people right away. Visit Indeed.com/credit. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Matt Holt. Running it back like the old days of 2019.
That's it.
By the way, I would not have even noticed this if our producer Aaron Oster didn't say something in my ear during the break. The Pistons were up 7. With less than 80 seconds to go, Matt. And that game is now tied at 98 with 19 seconds to go.
Yeah, that's what makes the Pistons the Pistons. And I'm with Aaron. I have the money line, not the +3. So I'll be pretty disappointed if they blow this lead and end up losing the game.
Detroit has the ball with 19 seconds, no shot clock. So
yeah, it should be a score or OT situation. But OT is never great for teams like Detroit.
No, it is not. It is not for sure there, Matt. We'll see how that plays out there in Motown. 98 apiece between the zombie Clippers and the Detroit Pistons tonight. 98-98.
Trying to see if I could see it behind us.
Another game you gave out on the show last night. 4 minutes to go in the first half. Memphis leading by 2 against the Dallas Mavericks, 51-49. Memphis closing a 3 or 3.5 point home dog, total 225.5. So far, Matt, it's been the Grayson Allen show. Because of course it is. 14 for Allen so far.
I like the way that they defend, and the fact that, you know, Dallas doesn't really have a lot of interior threats means that Memphis perimeter defense, which is pretty good, could become a factor tonight. And so far, so good. And I don't like the fact that Luka Doncic is out there complaining about the playoff format, and Mark Cuban is too. Look, hey, Mark, you're one of the people. When they say that the owners unanimously voted for it, that includes you, my friend. So, you know, they're only complaining because they're going to be part of that play. And I guarantee if they were the 4 or 5 seed, they probably wouldn't be complaining now. And I think that stuff can resonate this time of year. You know, let's make excuses why we're not going to win or why this is going against us rather than going out there and getting out of that play-in position. It felt like a good spot for a Memphis team that's playing good basketball lately and is only one slot behind Dallas right now in the Western Conference standings.
Yep. By the way, your Pistons bet might be in trouble in regulation. They turn it over and there's still 15 seconds left. So the Clippers have the ball there. The other big event we are monitoring right now is taking place on the south side of Chicago, though, in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
Back to the mound, Carlos Rodon goes, 21 up, 21 down. Franmil Reyes, Ben Gamel, and Ahmed Rosario, the three due up as, for some reason, Terry Francona in a game where the opposing pitcher has a perfect game going against you, took out arguably his best left-handed hitter in Eddie Rosario.
Yeah, I thought that was strange.
And put in Ben Gamel, who is many hits this year as you and I do.
Yes. Yeah. I think Ahmed Rosario, who got the clutch hit last night in extra innings, is a little bit scary. That's a guy coming over from the Mets who had a reputation as being a pretty good hitter. Hasn't quite lived up to it early this season, but maybe last night's extra inning hit is the spark that he needed.
Franmil Reyes just got fooled badly on a changeup.
He did
so
not look good.
1-1. We will keep you updated as that goes along. 8-0 White Sox. White Sox were a slight favorite. Total was 7.5, so the game's already gone over thanks to the White Sox offense.
Yeah.
But Carlos Rodon, again, trying to become the 24th in baseball history with a perfect game as Reyes pops it up into the shallow area right field and Moncada puts it away. Actually, that is Madrigal putting that away for the first out. So 22 up, 22 down.
Here we go.
Oh, there you go. Ben Gamel's coming. Now watch. They're going to hit for Gamel. Jake Bowers is going to pitch it here.
Jake Bowers. Oh. Yeah, it's an interesting move. At least they put a lefty back in, and it looks like the Detroit collapse is official. And Clippers score and win the game 100-98 in regulation. Clippers celebrating and laughing. Detroit doing what Detroit does. If you took the three with Detroit, you still got there. If you took the money line, you did not.
That's a disastrous loss for you and Aaron, our producer tonight.
Not a good one. Second night in a row.
Oh, Aaron took the points. Okay. So
for Aaron.
Only you are
just
in despair.
Me, man. It's always just me.
Matt, when we get back, we'll keep you updated on what's going on the south side of Chicago. Carlos Rodon, 22 up, 22 down, trying to become the 24th to throw a perfect game in Major League Baseball, but a big signing in the AFC North. We're going to go there next. We'll tell you all about it here on The Nightcap. Sports betting action is just getting started. And our VSiN experts are covering the early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft. So we'll give you all the tools to make the best bet you can on every single game. It includes our 24/7 live video coverage, odds and analysis on every game at VSiN.com, our daily members-only best bet email, and in-depth coverage, I should say, of every major event in point spread weekly. The weather and the betting action is heating up. The weather, not so much in Connecticut heating up, but at least here in Vegas it is.
Yep.
Now's the time. You sign up for your free 10-day VSiN trial today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Matt Holt. Before we get into the big news in the AFC North today, Matt, on the south side of Chicago, the White Sox 8, Cleveland nothing. That's not the story. Carlos Rodon, 24 up, 24 down, trying to become the 24th person to throw a perfect game in Major League Baseball.
And two straight strikeouts to finish the eighth. He looks strong.
Dominant-looking Ks to make it for sure. Which, by the way, that was a third of his strikeouts in that inning. He only has six still. Rodon would be the fourth White Sox perfect game if completed. That would take the White Sox out of a tie with the Yankees for the most ever. The perfect games for the White Sox are, of course, the Mark Burley one we mentioned earlier. Philip Umber, who might be the most perplexing perfect game thrower in Major League history, and the first one in the history of the White Sox, and which was the third in the World Series era, was Charlie Robertson in 1922, Matt.
Yeah, I missed that one.
2-0 against the Tigers. Just showing how different baseball was back then. Charlie Robertson's perfect game was 90 pitches.
Wow.
The second one in baseball history was by Addy Joss of the Cleveland Naps in 1908. It was a 74-pitch perfect game. It's a little different there back in the 1920s and the 19-teens.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's pretty good. By the way, as we said, Felix Hernandez, the last one to throw a perfect game. 2012 is the biggest anomaly of all time. There were three perfect games in 2012.
Wow.
Three. Umber, Kane, and King Felix. There hasn't been one since King Felix's on August 15th of 2012. Three in 1 year is ridiculous.
And that is ridiculous.
For their legitimately going into that year, only 18 before that. And there are three in 4.5 months. Absolutely wild there. Matt, there was a big signing in the AFC North, so we'll talk a little football here, and we're going to talk a little football in the next segment as well. Ben Standig of The Athletic will be talking draft with us in the next segment in about 7 minutes from now. But Jadeveon Clowney, the former number one overall pick, who has bounced around Houston, obviously, predominantly, a little bit in Seattle last year with the Titans, where he didn't do too much, gets a one-year, $10 million contract with Cleveland, Matt. And the big thing for me, the odds right now, the Browns plus 175 to win the AFC North at DraftKings, BetMGM plus 145, plus 170 at points bet. Matt, the biggest thing for me with Clowney here, it doesn't move the needle much in betting odds, obviously, but this will be the first time since when he was in Houston, when obviously he had Whitney Mercilus and that guy J.J. Watt, who was pretty good playing on that same pass rush attack. It's going to be the first time since then that he's had an elite pass rusher on the line with him like Myles Garrett is in Cleveland. And I'm interested to see, again, I don't know how much Clowney has truly left in the tank, but if Clowney has anything left in the tank, he should be able to perform opposite Myles Garrett, who's going to be the one seeing double teams.
Yes, and I actually think it's a good signing. I think he could regain some form here, especially if he's motivated. On a one-year deal, he's going to want to go out there and prove he's got something left in the tank to try to get a bigger deal. I think it's actually going to work out. I think that Cleveland D-line is going to be better because of this signing, and I'm excited to actually see what that defense could look like this year. I think this is a very positive signing for the Cleveland Browns.
To me, I'm a little surprised Cleveland actually isn't the favorite in the division.
Yes.
I'm surprised that they're still behind Baltimore.
Yeah.
Because the Ravens still don't have enough pieces for Lamar to utilize on offense. Sammy Watkins is your big offseason wide receiver acquisition. I mean, Sammy's a good player, don't get me wrong, but he's a number two wide receiver.
Correct.
There's still no number one wide receiver on that team. Mark Andrews, a good tight end, but unless if you're Travis Kelce or George Kittle at this point, and maybe you can throw Darren Waller in that conversation. Andrews is not in that conversation with those guys. And the running backs are still good, but again, I'm surprised with, again, the talent Cleveland has and the additions that Cleveland has made this offseason. The Browns, to me, should be favored in this division. And I'm not a huge bet the NFL in April guy, but that plus 175 at DraftKings, I don't think is going to be there much longer.
I agree. In fact, that's the highest I've seen in the market. So if you like the Cleveland Browns, DraftKings is definitely the spot for you to play it at, because that's certainly the highest number I've seen so far.
I'm stunned that number is as high as it is. I think that plus one, again, it's a shorter number and not a number you should be betting right now, but that BetMGM plus 145 to me feels like actually the number that it should be.
I agree. I don't want to bet 145 right now and let it sit for 7 months, but I like that plus 175. If we had DraftKings here, that would certainly be tempting.
By the way, you don't want the Bengals at 25-1? You don't want that?
No, but I'd rather have the Bengals at 25-1 than Pittsburgh at 3.5.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't disagree with that. I don't want anything to do with the Steelers.
Me neither.
Pittsburgh feels like a 7-9 team this year.
It feels like it could go wrong and that they were due for a rebuild and this could be the start of it.
By the way, if you are listening to us and at least want to keep us on dial while watching something.
The Vegas Golden Knights just scored. So I just have to say this. The Kings scored to make it 2-1.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, so tight game. And they just gave up a goal where it was like a shot from all the way across the ice, and the goalie just kind of nonchalant went to hit it with his stick, and it went over his stick and bounced in for a goal.
Not what you want.
Oh,
that's
man.
What I want, though, yes. Because I have Vegas to wrap up a three-team favorite hockey money line parlay with Minnesota and Winnipeg, who both won earlier today.
That one will certainly be on SportsCenter later.
Yeah, that was not what you want. By the way, we'll have to hit a break here. Ben Standick of The Athletic will be with us next. Carlos Rodon is warming up for the ninth inning. 24 up, 24 down, trying to throw the 24th perfect game in Major League Baseball history. He has to get through Josh Naylor, Roberto Perez, and I believe Ben Gamel, because the box score is showing Jake Bowers in the nine hole, and that is not correct because he already hit this inning. So we'll tell you if Rodon can complete the perfecto, and we'll also talk NFL draft with Ben Standick of The Athletic next year on VSiN. Life is a marathon, not a sprint, unless if you're hiring. Fortunately, Indeed has great tools that help you speed up the hiring process. So visit Indeed.com/credit. The show's the nightcap. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Matt Holt. Quick update on the south side of Chicago. Carlos Rodon, with the aid of an incredibly good play by Jose Abreu at first, to just beat Josh Naylor.
Because Rodon wasn't going to.
Rodon had no chance of getting to a weakly hit ground ball to the right side.
And he wasn't going to get there to cover the bag.
No chance. And Rodon now has Roberto Perez in an 0-2 hole. And we believe Yu Chang is on deck, regardless, to be the potential final out in this maybe perfect game, would be the 24th in Major League history. But we'll turn our attention, though, to draft, Matt, 2 weeks from tomorrow in the NFL.
Yep.
And we have Ben Standick right now. He covers the Washington football team and is an NFL reporter and dabbles in mock drafts as well for The Athletic. Ben, let's just get right into it. Number three is where everyone is saying this draft is going to start. We know Lawrence goes one to the Jags. Wilson, number two, to New York. What is your handicap right now on the third pick to the San Francisco 49ers?
Yeah, you know, whenever somebody does a mock draft, sometimes you have to remind the reader, in theory, this is not supposed to be what I would do. This is what I think will happen. And this is very much an example of that scenario, because it's really hard to, I think we're all probably downplaying Mac Jones a bit much. He had a very good year at Alabama, regardless of what his upside is. He did have a really good year, and there's reasons to be interested in him, but it does feel like from an upside perspective that Trey Lance or Justin Fields would be the more interesting play. But if I'm going to make a call right now based on what you read, what I've heard, and talking to people around the league, I think the answer is Mac Jones.
You know, while the number three pick has got a lot of debate, one of the bets we've seen a lot of movement on is who will be the first non-quarterback drafted. And for a while, it was Kyle Pitts, the odds-on favorite. But we've seen a lot of love for Penei Sewell in the last few days here. And now suddenly it's Pitts plus 140, Sewell plus 150, Jamar Chase getting a little love at plus 250. What do you think of that bet? First non-quarterback taken in the NFL draft just a few days ago. Everyone said it was Pitts for sure. A lot of love for some other players all of a sudden.
So that's interesting, right? So basically, if I'm reading this right, what we're saying is the fourth pick, the theory is going to take a quarterback, because if they didn't take a quarterback, they would probably take Kyle Pitts. So therefore, the fifth pick are the Cincinnati Bengals taking an offensive lineman or a wide receiver to help, or a sword to help Joe Burrow. If it's Penei Sewell against Jamar Chase, the top receiver, I can make the argument that they should take the linemen. You can get receivers later on. And, this is a deep draft for tackles, but Sewell, you just listen to people who study these things and they say he's an incredibly impressive prospect. And that's how I would build a team. But if you're telling me it's Kyle Pitts at five, and if what everybody says that he is this absolute freak of a talent, I might feel like I have to go in that direction. So I guess I'm sort of torn, but I understand why Sewell would be coming down that way. But if Pitts is actually there at five, I think I would say the Bengals would take him.
Ben Standick of The Athletic with us right now. He covers the Washington football team and the NFL at large for The Athletic. He also has a mock draft, which you can find at his Twitter handle, at Ben Standick. Quick update before the next question to Ben. Carlos Rodon's perfect game is gone.
Unbelievable.
Hit Roberto Perez with a curveball in the foot. So the no-hitter
on an 0-2 count,
on
right?
An 0-2 pitch. The no-hitter is still intact with two outs in the top of the ninth. Jordan Luplo will try to break up the no-no with a 1-1 count in an 8-0 game. Rodon trying to complete a no-hitter, no longer a perfect game. Ben, I want to look at the first defensive player drafted market, and we have seen this move all over the place over the last week or so. Micah Parsons was the favorite as of last Thursday. He's no longer the favorite to go first for defensive players at DraftKings. Patrick Surtain II now is plus 120. Micah Parsons at 2-1. Kwity Paye at 4-1. And then J.C. Horn at 7-1. Who would you look at there in that market as the first defensive player picked in this draft?
I lost you there for a second. Did you say Patrick Surtain is now the leader?
Yes, Surtain is now the favorite at plus 120. Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting thought. I think, yeah, right, if you had asked me this at any point in the previous 2 months, I think I would have said Micah Parsons, even though there's some question about where he falls, some maturity question, things like that. There's no really, doubting his athletic abilities. But I think you're right. I think the people are right, because I think the stable option right now is Surtain. I think he's ceiling, his ceiling, I think, is at the 8th pick to Carolina, and his floor might be the 10th pick to Dallas. And I don't know if there's a team picking in front of that that I can see taking a defensive player. If you told me the Lions at 7 take Parsons, okay, maybe, but I'd have to, I'd have to see how that unfolds, that I view that he's the best guy. So I think that's a reasonable thought. I guess my only wonder would be if the Panthers, say, take an offensive tackle at 8 and the Broncos are at 9 and don't take quarterback, I would think they would take not a corner, because they signed a bunch of corners in free agency, but I would think they could take Parsons. But I think that the odds are probably better than Surtain, so I do kind of like that call right now.
Just two nights ago, Monday night, we were talking about the first wide receiver to come off the board, and Ja'Marr Chase was about even money, and then Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle were getting some love there. Just 48 hours later, it is Ja'Marr Chase minus 500 now to be the first wide receiver taken off the board. What do you think's happened in the last 48 hours? And is it a foregone conclusion at this point that Ja'Marr Chase will be the number one wide receiver taken in the draft?
My sense is Chase, Waddle, and then Devonta Smith comes after that. I think that my sense of the situation is that's the thing. I think Chase is the likely receiver first. I think there may be one team specifically that I could see going a different way, but I think by and large, I do think it makes sense that Chase would be the leader with Smith. To me, it's either Chase or Waddle. I wouldn't look at Smith at this point.
Ben Standick of The Athletic with us right now here on the Nightcap. Quick update on the south side of Chicago. Carlos Rodon has thrown a no-hitter.
Yep.
As he gets Jordan Luplo to ground out to third base. The second no-hitter in 5 days in Major League Baseball. The second of the season. Joe Musgrove was first for the historic first no-no in the history of the Padres. Carlos Rodon throwing his first career no-hitter, the first time he's ever pitched in the ninth inning as well.
I know, that was a crazy stat.
Last August was the last White Sox no-hitter. Lucas Giolito did it against the Pittsburgh Pirates last season in the shortened season. Ben, let's get back to the draft, though. We have about 2 minutes here, Ben. Give me something, at least looking at the top 15 here. What team do you think is most likely to throw a pick out there that would surprise us the most?
Oh, boy. Let's think about this. The top 15, who's going to go wacky? I guess I'm sort of curious about what the Lions do at seven. I mean, I don't think they're taking a quarterback, but at the same point, you know, for a team that's like a little bit away, I don't know if taking a receiver, like if we're just talking roster building, I don't know if taking a receiver is the way I would definitively go. I just feel like you can get receivers later in the draft and also pretty much every, you know, most years. But I don't know who else they would take. So, you know, it feels like that's like a, you know, there's a few interesting pivot points in the draft. I think Detroit probably also would like to trade down. So that doesn't really answer your question about who would take an odd pick, but they could, you know, I think there could be some either weirdness with that pick or some action with that pick.
Well, Ben, the Lions are always capable of anything, as we know, to say the very least. At number seven, it wouldn't shock me if they went, in all honesty, even if they went Justin Fields at number seven. It's not like Jared Goff is a long-term answer there in Detroit. He's Ben Standick. Get him on the tweets at his name. Ben Standick is Standig. He covers the Washington football team, also does mock drafts as well for The Athletic, and we were happy to have him with us tonight. Ben, thank you for being with us and staying up on the East Coast for us.
Hey, no, I'm happy to do it. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ben.
Great to talk to Ben. I do agree with him that the funkiest thing that can happen early in this draft is Detroit just goes completely off the board, which, again, with the Lions, we know that's always a possibility, Matt.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like when you're drafting in the top five, that's a little bit rare in their spot.
Well, they're picking seven. They're lower than usual.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah.
For not expected landing places for Justin Fields, and we'll get into this later in the show, Matt, that's one that some may think it's impossible, but I see a path there where Detroit panics and is like, well, do we really think Jared Goff is the long-term answer? Which the correct answer should be no.
Correct.
And Justin Fields is just sitting there at number seven. I wouldn't hate that if the Lions actually did that.
Yeah.
Really wouldn't.
It's possible.
But we'll go into that further as well. By the way, so Carlos Rodon, as we said during the interview there, Carlos Rodon has thrown a no-hitter. The first White Sox no-hitter since last August when Lucas Giolito did it against the Pirates. Matt, the White Sox have 20 no-hitters in their franchise.
Unbelievable.
History, which is the most. That's incredible.
Well, I'm probably the most by a lot, right?
I'll have to double check this during the break. I just saw that it was the most, but 20 no-hitters?
Amazing they have 20 in a team like the Padres just got their first.
I mean, the Mets and the Padres have combined for two.
Yeah.
With the franchises that had really good pitching throughout their existence as well. Kurt Heelan of NBC Sports is going to talk NBA with us next here on the Nightcap.